Thanks, Sheldon. Don, alcoholic? Morning, everybody. So jumping back into the fourth step, which Sheldon's done a great job covering resentment, I just want to make a couple of quick observations before I move on to the fear part of the inventory. You know, starting on the bottom of page 65, after we write our first three columns, it says that we're going to consider it carefully. And it says, the first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was usually as far as most of us ever got. That is probably one of the truest statements about me that you can make. And it can be true today. You see, this is very important that when I read these directions, that I understand that these are going to be my directions for dealing with my resentments for the rest of my life. That it isn't something that I'm doing when I'm new in Alcoholics Anonymous and I come in and I have all of these manifestations of self that are showing up in my life. That really what I'm doing in inventory, it's one thing to say that I'm selfish and I'm self-centered and that's the root of my trouble. How does that show up in my life? What does that look like? How's that affecting me in my daily living? How is that making my life so uncomfortable that I have to anesthetize myself on a daily basis just to be on the planet? So I'm going to look for how it shows up in my life. I'm going to look at my resentments, my fears, and my sex life, and then that's probably going to cover most of it. Not everything, but it's going to give me a really good look on how my self-centeredness is showing up in my life. So the first thing I have to do is I have to get to this point where I agree with that. Is that as far as I've ever gotten with my resentments, to conclude that others were wrong? And if that's true, then the next part that the book says, it's going to say the usual outcome is I'm sore, I'm burned out, people continue to harm me, I continue to feel like a victim. I continue to go through my life, and when I have conflict, what I do is I get resentful and I blame others. And so I'm constantly in a position of superiority. I'm constantly in a position of thinking that you're the problem, I don't have anything to do with it. If you only behaved, everybody would be pleased, including myself. So first of all, to agree with that, that chips away a big false truth that I've been carrying around my whole life, that I've gone through life and wherever I've had conflict with others in this life, I've always blamed them instantly and been very comfortable with that. That I'm judge, jury, and executioner. And I do that alone. I don't do that with your counsel. I don't do that with a sponsor. I don't do that talking for out. I do that in my head. And I'm comfortable with that. And that's how I process this stuff. To the day I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, that is my way of processing resentments. I conclude others are wrong, and that's as far as most of us ever get, and that's certainly as far as I've got. And Sheldon talks about this great shift, that it's so important that we make the shift, the 180-degree turn. And what I'm doing is I'm taking this process I've lived in my whole life and I'm prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. And Sheldon did a great job talking about how we look at these things differently. There's something I want to touch on that's important, just a little side note, that the directions that start on the page of 66 and continue on the top of page 67, this is me preparing. Because it's one thing to say I'm going to look at the list from an entirely different angle, okay. If I'm not spiritually prepared to do that, I can't do that. And this is why. By this time in the process of the steps, in the second step, I had to come to a really strong realization and embrace it, which was lack of power was my dilemma. I had to find a power by which I could live, and it had to be a power greater than myself, obviously. Now, notice when we read that in the second step, it said, it didn't say, I had to find a power by which I could stay sober. It didn't say, I had to find a power by which I could quit drinking. What it said is, I had to find a power by which I could live. And what we're talking about now is the business of life when we're talking about these resentments. So, what I have to understand as I go into this, I don't have the power to do anything about this. I am powerless over these resentments. Now, I can intellectually absorb a lot of information about my resentments from my sponsor, from other AA members, but if I think by wishing it away, I'm going to be able to do something about it, the needed power isn't there. So what I'm doing is very spiritual in nature on the bottom of page 67 and 66 and the top of page 67, and what I'm doing is I'm praying. Now, prayer is a form of going to God and asking God for something that I don't have naturally. So what don't I have naturally? I don't have the same pity, patience that I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. I don't have the ability to look at people as sick people. I don't have the ability to look at people that perhaps they're spiritually ill just like I am. So I have to go to God and ask God to help me remember, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? I ask God to save me from being angry. Thy will be done. So I'm going to God because I don't have the power to do anything about these resentments. If I think that the self-knowledge, like, yeah, I feel this way, I've been really selfish about this, I've never been willing to look at it from their point of view, and I think that there's going to be the needed power there to do anything about it, I'm wrong. And one of the reasons I'm wrong about thinking, I love my resentments. Now, I can say that today, and I would have denied that when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, no, I don't want to be resentful. I don't want to be angry all the time. Why was I so angry? Why did I cling to my resentments? Why did I nurture them, feed them, protect them? Well, my resentments in my case were my explanation for a poorly lived life. You see, I can comfort myself with that tough neighborhood I came from, that family I came from, that dad that deserted the family. And Sheldon and I have the same story. I have a dad that left when I was 2 years old. He never looked back. That was the linchpin. That was the key resentment. That was the resentment that all other resentments came from. That's the resentment that painted me as a victim. That was my explanation for a poorly lived life. So it's valuable to me. And just understanding on a basis of self-knowledge, the value of the resentment doesn't change anything either. I'm still resentful. I don't have any way to function without. This is the only way I know how to live. Now, there's something that I hear in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hear it on a pretty regular basis, and I know where it came from. And what I hear is people in open meetings talk about resentment. And they say things like this, well, I went to work today with my boss, and boy, whew, I do not like my boss. She's just a sick puppy, let me tell you. But she can't help it. She's just evil, bless her heart. But, you know, I'm an AA, and I might be the only one in that office that has a program. So I do what I've been taught in AA, and I'm praying for her. Because she can't help it. She's just sick. And then I'll hear somebody else share an Alcoholics Anonymous, and they'll go, yeah, you know, I'm pretty resentful. You know, I got a big resentment going with my, my landlord. You know, I got this broken stuff at the house. And, you know, he says he's going to fix it, and he never does. But, you know, he's a phony. He's a fake guy is what he is. He's a fake guy. You know, he can't help it. You know, he's one of those guys that look to your face and don't lie, you know. And I'm resentful, and he's very pissed off. I really want to kick his butt, but I'm not going to do it because I'm an AA. And I'm doing what the program says. You know, I'm praying for him. I got to tell you, it's helping. I'm praying for him. I haven't hit him yet, but I'm praying for him. And so what I'm hearing in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is that when I have a resentment, I pray for somebody. And I know where it comes from. It comes from a story in the Big Book. And it comes from a story called Freedom from Bondage. And it's a great story, and it's about a woman that had a lot of resentments. In fact, she referred to her diary, and she goes, when I read my diary, everybody in my diary I had a resentment against. And she says that she went ahead and took all those resentments and did the work in the book, and every one of those resentments responded to the work in the book. But she had one she couldn't get rid of, just one, and it was her mother. And she was desperate to get rid of this resentment. She couldn't figure out a way to do it. So she came across an article in a newspaper written by a clergyman that said, if you pray for this person every day for 2 weeks, wishing that they had everything that you would want for yourself, you will be free of this resentment. And she did that, and she became free of her resentment towards her mother. And I think it's a great story. But I also think it's important to note, she had 100 resentments. 99 of them she went through the process with, and 99 of them worked. One she couldn't get rid of. My concern is that people, what they're hearing in Alcoholics Anonymous is, when I have a resentment, I pray for others. Now, here's the only problem I have with that. I don't know. Maybe you're spiritually developed in a place beyond where I understand. But when I pray for people, I almost notice I always do it from what? A position of inferiority or superiority? I'm always doing it from a position of superiority. And what I become naturally, without even knowing it, is I become the guy on page 66. To conclude that others were wrong was usually as far as I get. Because what I do is, you hurt my feelings, I go into resentment, I justify the resentment by saying, you're wrong, I'm right, you're sick, I'm well, that's a shame, sorry for you, I'm gonna pray for you, you poor sick son of a bitch. And the problem with that process is I will never get the true gift of doing inventory. The biggest gift an alcoholic can ever get, which we around here, we call it the truth. You know, I came in and I had very, very deep-seated resentments. One of them, I'll tell you just briefly, was about my mother. Now, I can tell you two stories about my mother. And I can tell you about my mother, the alcoholic, I can tell you about growing up in poverty and insanity and screaming and physical violence and a lot of horrible things. And if I told you the story just right, hopefully you would feel sorry for me. And that was always my intention when I told that story. And I would demonize my mother. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I only had the ability to tell that story. I had no other story about my mother. I was filled with spite and raging and venom. Because it's funny the things I conveniently forgot on my way to Alcoholics Anonymous as I lived the life of a drunk, as I lived in resentment, as I clung to these resentments as an explanation for a poorly lived life. And now I know the story that is true today because of inventory. I had a mother that raised three kids on her own, never took a dime of welfare, took two buses to work, two buses home to put food on that table, made sure we had clean clothes. We didn't have a lot, but she did what she could. You know, made sure that I had money to go play sports and organize teams, made sacrifices over and over and over again on Christmas and birthdays so we wouldn't feel like we were the odd poor family in the neighborhood. Yet this woman who sacrificed her entire adult life, who stayed when it would have been easier to leave, who adores me to this day and has never wanted anything but the best for me, I completely and utterly hated by the time I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, that's what resentment does to me. It doesn't just destroy me, it destroys the people I'm resentful. It cuts me off. First it cuts me off from God, and then it cuts me off from you. So it's very important to me that I follow the directions in Alcoholics Anonymous, or I'm never going to get the gift out of there. Now, to talk about fear, bottom of page 67, notice the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstance which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did we, ourselves, set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. We think fear ought to be classed with stealing. So if we're going to put it in a classification, we're going to take fear, we're going to put it alongside there with stealing. Why is that important to me? Well, I understand stealing. How is fear steal? How is fear a thief? Biggest thief I ever knew in my life is fear. Fear tells me I dare not look that way. Fear tells me it won't work out. Fear tells me I'm not enough. There's two basic human fears. Now, we could talk about the thousand fears we have. There's two basic ones. One, I won't be loved, and two, I'm not enough. And today in my life, when I'm in fear, I ask myself, which of those basic fears is being tampered with? Which one of those is being touched on? That I won't be loved or that I'm not enough? In matters of the heart, usually gets both of them. I class it with stealing because what it does is it takes from me. It doesn't add anything to me. But what do we do about fear? Now that we understand fear and the fabric of our existence is shot through with it, let's just not be afraid. Well, just go do it. Do the next right thing. Take the next right action. You see, we're forgetting that when we tell newcomers in AA, look, you're just afraid. Go take the next right action. Doesn't matter how you feel. Doesn't matter what you think. Just go do the next right thing. I'm forgetting that fear, I can't do anything about fear. It's a common manifestation of self. I read in the third step when I found out about my selfishness and self-centeredness that I could not get rid of it without God's help, nor could I reduce it much under my own power. I cannot get rid of the fear, nor can I reduce it much under my own power. This is not going to be about Don bringing it. Alcoholics Anonymous is not a self-help program. Alcoholics Anonymous is a self-sucks program. So I'm not going to take myself and apply it to any of these problems I have in my life. The needed power just isn't there. So I'm going to come down on the page here on page 68, and it's going to give me the directions. Perhaps there's a better way, we think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. When did that happen? Well, that happened in the third step for me. I made a decision to turn my will and life over to the care of God, so now I'm operating on a different basis. I'm in the world to play the role He assigns. I'm just trying to simply figure out what God would have me be. So now I'm on a different footing. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role He assigns. Just to the extent, and this is a kind of a math formula if you think about this, just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity? When I went through the book the first time, my sponsor said, what do you think that calamity is? I said, it's the warrants for my arrest. It's the 80 grand I owe the IRS. It's the fact I haven't worked in a year. It's the fact I'm 31 years old, new in Alcoholics Anonymous, living at my sister's house, no prospects. And he goes, no. The calamity is the wind blowing through the gut. The calamity is the storm in your mind when you think about the facts of your life. And what we're telling you here is just to the extent that you trust and humbly rely on God, no more and no less than that, to that extent, will you be rewarded with serenity to match that internal disturbance that has dogged you your whole life, that internal disturbance that has forced you to go out and drink time and time again because you can't face life on life's terms, that internal disturbance that tells you it's not going to work out for you. You'll be rewarded with that, but just to the extent that you trust and humbly rely on God. Now, there's some directions here about what I'm going to do about my fear, and these directions are very important to me because I use these directions in my day-to-day living today. I have some form of fear that pops up in my life on a daily basis. Now, because I'm 26 years old and sophisticated and my ego tells me I shouldn't have fear any longer at this point of the game, I will try to minimize what is truly fear. I will say things like this: I'm not afraid, I'm concerned. No, I'm afraid. And it doesn't get any less embarrassing when your ego's involved. When your ego's involved and you're 6'5 and 280 pounds and you're 26 years sober and Alcoholics Anonymous, I feel embarrassed at times to let people know the role that fear is playing in my life. But I had to get over that embarrassment so I could go to God and trust Him and show up in a humble manner and be able to go to God and say, I'm just afraid, Dad. I don't know what to do. I know I shouldn't feel this way, and I know what to do. Nobody needs to tell me what to do. I know what the action is to take, but I can't seem to take the action. The needed power isn't there. So you see, I have to go to God, and I have to first ask Him to remove my fear, and that's a prayer. In prayer, I say, God, please remove this fear. Remove this fear of applying for the job. Remove that fear for applying to college. Remove that fear of making that amends. Remove that fear of showing up and asking that girl out. Remove that fear of going back to those people and cleaning up that mess. Whatever the fear is, I ask specifically for God to remove that fear. Why? Prayer is a form of asking something that I do not have the ability naturally to do on my own. I do not have the power to overcome my fear. I have to be specific and go to God and ask Him to remove it. And then I ask in prayer to direct my attention to what He would have me be. And as I said yesterday, all my life, I've spent a lot of time trying to figure out what they want me to be, what she wants me to be, what the world wants me to be, what I think I should be, for what? To get what I want. I'll be anything you want me to be, show you anything you want to see, manipulate you in any way I can, but underneath all that, bet your bottom dollar is a guy trying to get his own way. We're trying to break away from that self-centered way of approaching life. I'm trying to live on the service plane. So now in prayer, I ask God to direct my thinking. Why? Because my thinking is in what direction? The fear. I'm thinking about the fear, what's going to happen. They're going to say this, and I'm going to say that, and then they're going to say that, and then I'm going to punch them, and then I won't have the job. That's how it works in my head. I have to have a new form of thinking. You know, one of the most overlooked areas of our recovery, in my humble opinion, is our thought life. We're terrified of it. And when we're new, we kind of get drilled, don't we? Doesn't matter what you think, doesn't matter how you feel, just matters what you do. The world will judge you by your intentions, or by your actions, not by your intentions. And so we fall in love with that, right? Because what we do is we find out that we can do the right thing even though we're thinking the wrong thing. And people will say things to you in Alcoholics Anonymous like this: hey, listen, man, nobody ever went to jail for thinking about robbing a bank. And that's true, but nobody ever robbed a bank without thinking about it first. So to completely ignore our thought life, I think, is a dangerous proposition. I don't think that we have to be afraid of our thoughts anymore. I think that we've just tapped into an unsuspected inner resource. I think that we've now just started in a commitment and a relationship with God as we understand Him. And I believe the power of God goes deep. I believe there's no problem I can bring to my God that He can't take care of. So the humbleness required in this fear exercise is understand I'm in a state of humility, which means I'm aware of my shortcomings, which is I can't do anything about it. I know that. My power will not be necessary to overcome fear. I ask God to remove my fear. I ask Him to direct my thinking to what He would have me be. Now I have an idea, a vision in my mind of what I look like if I wasn't scared. What would I look like if I actually believed in God? What would I do if I actually had a relationship with God and believed that all the power of the universe was at my disposal to do the right thing? What would that guy look like? Not me, but that guy. And now that I have that, what the book promises me is I commenced to outgrow fear. It doesn't say the fear is removed. It says I commenced to outgrow fear, and commence just means to begin. Now, why is that important to me? Listen, I only know two things to kill fear. Only two. One is whiskey, and the other is action. Now, I can't do anything about the whiskey. I don't drink anymore. The only thing I know that's going to kill fear is action. Here's the problem. I don't have the power to get to the action. You see, I'm on the couch. My feet are rooted to the floor. I know the right thing to do. I just can't get up and even start to do it. But when I ask God to remove my fear and direct my thinking, what happens is the fear reduces. I commence to outgrow it. That's all I need. That's called an opportunity. It's a reduction in the fear. You feel it. You actually feel that fear reduce. Not go away. It's still on your mind. You're still scared. But it reduces enough for what? Get into action. We never sit and wait for the fear to be completely removed. What we do is we begin to outgrow the fear, and then with God, we go and take care of business. And we invite God into our life. God, I'm so scared. Will you come with me? And God always says, yes, I'll be there with you. We show up where we have to show up. We open the door, and we say, after you, God, and we let God walk in first. And what we do is now we start walking through things in our life that we don't think we can do. And we make it through. We find out the truth about the fear. Fear turns out to be the boogeyman. Fear turns out to be something manufactured in our own mind. And we take a little bit of experience and we go, oh my God, I was so scared. And we put it in our pocket and we go, I was wrong about that. That thing I was so scared of. You know, and people say that time doesn't matter in Alcoholics Anonymous. I disagree. Sober experiences, you only get it one day at a time, but it's so valuable because you pay attention to this stuff. And I got pockets full of experiences that say it was just fear. And now when I'm in fear on a daily basis, I can go, you know what? I bet it's just like that other thing. And I will be driving down the road on my way to an appointment. I'm trying to close a deal. That deal represents something to me. Represents money, security, represents my sex life. My wife likes me a lot more when I can pay the bill. I mean, I'm telling you. And suddenly that becomes the most important thing in the world. And I will feel anxious and I will feel concerned and I will be rehearsing in my mind and I will say this when they say that and I am cut off from God because I am running the show. And I'll feel this anxiety coming up in me and I will stop and go, what's going on with you, Landis? What's going on right now? And I'll go, man, I'm just in fear. I'm just scared. And I'll say, God, I'm afraid this deal isn't going to go my way and I know that's not my business, that's your business. If I'm supposed to get it, I'll get it. My job's to be a service. Please take this fear away from me. Direct my thinking to what you would have me be. Suddenly I feel the fear start lifting. Suddenly I'm back with God. Suddenly I don't care whether I close the deal or not. Now I've got a different approach. He's directed my thinking. Now I'm showing up somewhere just being a service. And whether I get the deal or not, I'm going to be okay. And that's what this exercise does for me. We're going to take a break right now. We're going to be back. We're in a tight schedule today. So when I say 10 minutes, we're going to fire this thing back up at 5 after 10. Thank you.